The following is a presentation of Open for Business, InterVarsity Christian Fellowship's conference for business students and business professionals at the Urbana 06 Missions Convention, held in St. Louis, December 2006. For more information, please visit ofb.intervarsity.org.
I sort of colored it so as to bring to you some emphasis that I see. How, it's a matter of how, not why, to a large extent, do you as an individual in a large corporate company pursue business as ministry? This is a very good question and a very good topic, because it almost seems that when you're at these BAM conferences, they are for guys who are business owners or to be business owners or directors. And for most of us who are sort of stuck in between and going to the workplace, you know, we find ourselves a little lost. So I want to give us hope that there is business as ministry in a multinational corporation. Okay. What is the potential global impact when Christians are mobilized to impact the marketplace? We will discuss geographic and cultural differences to take into account, and how to think about being a small but transformational, and I like the word small, but transformational part of a big organization. You look at that and go, boy, I could do this in like one whole week, because there's so much to talk about. And I'll do my best within the limited time given, before they start buzzing me off, to hopefully to shed some light on the issue. Basics, but before we go, we want to cover some basic understanding of what it means for business as ministry and missions. There are a lot of speakers who sort of allude to many of these principles. I sort of want to gather a little bit and make sure that we have all the bases covered, so that you have a holistic picture as you begin to walk out this door about what it means for business as ministry and missions. And I use the words ministry and missions almost interchangeably, okay? The first thing, as you've heard many times already, is in Genesis 1. And if you read, it says, it presents God as a worker. Is that correct? Everybody agree? Okay. And that our God is a Trinitarian God. This is a very important concept, which is lost almost in our churches. We don't talk about the Trinity very much. Part of the reason is probably because we don't understand it very well. But if you look into Genesis verses 1 to 3, you can clearly see the Trinity written there. It says, in the beginning, God, in a sense, the Father, and the Spirit hovers over the earth, over the chaos, right? And He spoke the word, the Logos. And so in Genesis 1, you already have got a Trinitarian God. This is a very important concept, especially when we begin to look at the application side. This will have value on what I'm going to talk about later, okay? So you have to bear with me a little bit on this. It may seem a little boring, but it is very critical in what we are talking about. The third thing is that man and woman, humankind, is made in the image of a worker. Because we have the DNA of being a worker in us, work becomes a natural part of who we are. And when God made us in His image, He being a worker, we were made to work. And that work becomes then for a blessing and not a curse or a necessary evil. You have to get that down in your brain. If there's nothing else you walk out with, remember this. Whatever work that you are doing in and of itself has value. We'll talk a little bit more about that also. Okay? Man is called to work. This is a cultural mandate. The well-known term is called a cultural mandate or commission, a creation mandate or creation commission, where God made Adam and gave him dominion over the earth. There was a sense of stewardship, that we were called to be stewards of the earth, or co-stewards with God. And the very chapter 2, verse 15, God placed Adam in the garden to work it and to guard it. Okay? The Hebrew word for work and guard is the same Hebrew word that is being used to worship God and to keep His commandments. Let me repeat that. The same Hebrew word for work and guard is the same Hebrew word for to worship God and to keep His commandments. Now, it gives us a tremendously different perspective when we begin to approach our work as if we were to be worshiping God, keeping His commandments. Okay? Therefore, there comes a call to stewardship. We forgot about that too. That God, we become stewards of God's gift to us. Right? And to care for His created order. This is also another important point. I'm trying to squeeze 30 hours of coursework that we do into 15 minutes. Okay? The effects of sin in Genesis 3. Many of us, or many times we think about the fall of man as a broken relationship between man and God. Between humankind and God. And that is true. And we sort of stop at that. But we forgot that there are three other implications that happens, which I don't have time to dwell on how, but I will give you the end result. Two is that there are broken relationship between man and man, or between man and woman, between humankind. And within myself as an identity of who I am. My image of who I am is corrupted because I do no longer see God as God wants to see me. The effects of sin is very important to understand this. The third aspect is that sin affects not only the relationship that we have with God and among human beings and within myself, it also affects how we relate to the created order. Now, in Genesis 3, you will see that the earth, the ground was cursed. Work was never cursed because God can never curse Himself and His character. It was the ground that was cursed, and therefore thorns and thistles began to grow. Right? And therefore, when sin happens, work was made harder and it was corrupted. And the last portion, which is very critical, is that the environment in itself becomes disharmonized. The reason why we have natural disasters of tsunami, storms, and blizzards, and so on, that people get killed, was not because we do not have a loving God, but because we have sin that has corrupted the system. Even the earth itself is working against itself, and there was resistance. Okay? What is the implication of those? Basically this. We are sinners. Our colleagues are sinners. Our families are sinners. And sin corrupted the environment in which we work with. So it is, sin is pervasive in its effects on the entire created order, not just a broken relationship between man and God. And then we see now in the New Testament, where we present Jesus as a worker. Now, many people say Jesus went into ministry at the age of 30 and He died at 33 on the cross and then He resurrected. What was Jesus doing for the first 30 years? Thumb twiddling till kingdom comes, till He was called into ministry? No, Jesus was already in ministry. He cannot be different from Himself. He worked as a carpenter. Now, I just give you a simple thought. Would you like to be a customer of Jesus' furniture store? You will get the best quality, creative, lovingly done pieces of work. Right? That in itself is honoring and dignifying to God. And so we begin to see in the later letters that it's redeeming work that we're talking about, and I'm using it as a pun. There's a redeeming work in the sense of in the general sense of helping people to get to know about who God is, the reconciliation work of getting people to know what Jesus has done on the cross and to accept Him as His personal Savior. But the other side of the redeeming work is how we as Christians now being redeemed to go into the world and to begin to redeem work so that it becomes once again dignified to God. It is a process of what we call sanctification. And we begin to sanctify not only our character, but also to sanctify the things in which we work with and the people whom we work with. Romans again, 12:1 emphasizes, therefore, brothers and sisters, present your living body as sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, for this is your reasonable act of what? Worship. Look back again in what I mentioned in point 4, that our work is to worship God and to keep His creation, to guard His creation. And move further up to Revelations again, when we begin to see the redemption. Now, it's amazing to read Revelations 21 and 22. Because we begin to see the fuller picture. What was garden in Genesis was a city in Revelation. What was raw material in Genesis became finished products. It takes work to complete finished products. Okay. Having said that, we'll keep rolling on. I want you to keep this in the back of your mind, right? As I begin to talk about what it means to work out our business as Ministry of Missions in a multinational corporation. One of the fundamental things to remember is that the church is the gathered people of God. The laos of God, the people of God is the church. It is not a building, it is not a place. And therefore, we see the dynamics of the beauty of the week when the Christians are gathered on Sunday for worship, for equipping and for resource and dispersed into areas of business, government, education, healthcare, family, arts and culture, where they do ministry in the world. And there's that dynamic of that coming together for worship, dispersing or scattering for ministry. Gathering for worship, scattering for ministry. Gathering for worship, scattering for ministry. And you begin to see that pattern also in the book of Acts, where we talk about the early church. Now, with all that background, let's at least have a clearer definition of a fundamental understanding of what at least a multinational corporation is. Simply said, a multinational corporation is a company or business that has production or operations in more than one country. Okay? And that does not limit to big-sized corporations that run to the hundreds of billions of dollars or hundreds of millions of dollars, but it also runs to small and mid-sized companies that may be running 2 million, 5 million, 10 million US dollars type of a business. And we have a number of GCCs, the Great Commission's company, who are operating within that multinational context. But today we're going to focus a little bit more on the bigger companies, alright? But it's not limited to the bigger companies only. Now, what are the unique challenges of us working in a multinational environment? You really think of yourself progressing through an office, okay? One of it is, multinational corporations have very clearly defined job scope and job description. If you go and work as a service support personnel, you go to work as a programmer, you have very specific and limited scope of work. And therefore it becomes difficult to see what's the purpose. Now, If you are a programmer and you're sitting in front of a computer and you're working at it all day as a test engineer, writing test programs for semiconductor chips, you know, you begin to lose the vision of the purpose after a while. When you look at accounting and you keep looking at numbers day in and day out and trying to balance the sheet, and if it's 1 cent off, you scream and then you continue working on it. Or you work with colleagues, you know, anyway, let me keep that. The other thing is that BAM is wonderful because you have got a very explicit, intentional Christian context in which you can work with, right? But in a multinational corporation, it is either within a non-Christian, quote-unquote, secular context, or it is not explicitly Christian. It may be run by Christian CEOs or board of directors or vice presidents, you know, and they operate from a Christian principle, but on paper it is not explicitly Christian. So it's basically doing ministry one hand tied behind your back. You know, BAM, you use two hands. In multinational corporations, you can only use one, and sometimes with only one finger. The other thing is, being in the strata of promotion. I mean, I tell you, multinational corporations are scary. They have so many layers of promotion. Executive grades, maybe 1 to 15, managerial grade, maybe 1 to 10 again, and it keeps piling up the strata. And sometimes you feel you're sandwiched, especially for middle management. I'm given an order to do something. I'm given an instruction and directed to do something. If I don't do it, I get fired. But if I'm trying to operate out of a Christian principle, I may also get fired. It's a catch-22. What can a Christian do? The feeling of being sandwiched and nowhere to turn. And the only thing that happens is sometimes people gather into office prayer groups and then they moan and they groan and they moan and they groan. And then they go, oh, okay, God will be gracious. And then they walk away without a solution, hoping that things will turn around. Now, here's the other one. You will probably begin to find out that you begin to move from quad sharing cubicles to twin sharing cubicles into maybe a room without windows. Your own room, finally I got my own room but no windows. And then but you move up the ladder and go, you maybe move up the stories of the building as well. You know, you were at the second floor and then now you've been promoted, you really went up to the fifth floor. And then finally I've got my own window. That's about 50 years old and you're ready for the golden handshake. And you begin to find the futility of your work. Right? And you say, why am I doing this? I'm just getting bigger paychecks and maybe bigger offices. Is that what I'm striving for? The other thing which is unique and tremendous now is because of globalization, you don't have to go to the world. The nation is right next to your cubicle. I mean, I used to work at a semiconductor third-party manufacturing firm. We have 1,200 employees in there. I was just a lowly sales account manager. And we had 12, 14 nations working in that small place, six-story building. The nations is at your, not just your next door, but in your cubicle, next cubicle. I want to give you a spectrum, because multinational corporation and the job scope gives you various degrees of context, whether it is a local context or cross-cultural context. I've been told that there is a wonderful laser pointer here. Yay! Now, on this side, you can see the left screen on your side. It's the context. You could have local context or cross-cultural context. Okay? Or, from a geographical perspective, you can have a local or foreign geographical placement. Now, let me just give you basic ideas. For example, if you are in a production or local services within a multinational corporation, your local customer support, or you are in the production line, test engineering, and so on and so forth, or you are in accounting doing local projects, most of your contacts will be local, right? You will be meeting people of the same kind for the most part, right? Then there are those who are doing international customer service, where they begin to interact cross-culturally with people, but over a phone or emails. Okay? They have more cross-cultural contacts, but they never see them, because geographically they are stuck on a local context. Okay? Then you have those who are expats, people who go overseas to work. We use the US as the base for local, and the other countries as foreign, okay, in this context. They will go to, say, India or Japan or Korea, and so on and so forth. They will go over there to live, but in my observation as a person from Singapore, many Christian expats don't have much contact with the local people. Even the Christian, they congregate into churches, they are predominantly Westerners. I've got this church in Singapore whose Sunday school program runs according to the US schedule from September to June rather than the local one which runs from January to December. And local people just can't get in because it was structured around a United States standard. And they put their children not in the local school but in the international school. I can understand that there are considerations. I'm not saying anything wrong with that. But what I'm saying is that they do have very little local contacts, even though they were in a foreign land. But there are some who intentionally go in and make friends and dwell with people who are in a foreign context. Okay, and also people like myself who are in international sales and marketing. Now, we are the itinerant travelers. We spend half the time on the road, or thereabout. Some spend even more time on the road. And most of the time you come across and you're traveling into countries for 3 to 5 days and you disappear. And you go back to your home base, wherever that may be, and you continue to move in and out of those countries. For example, my Middle East sales manager resides in Canada and he keeps flying out to the Middle East. You know, we keep joking about him being Nicolas Cage in The Lord of Wars. If you guys have seen the movie. But you need to understand that there is a spectrum of multinational experiences and to begin to figure out at your job where you are and where would you like to go in terms of doing it cross-culturally or doing it a more homogeneous local culture. Now, the other thing you begin to think about is this whole thing about moving from cubicle to office with a window, is that you begin to grow, and there are stages of this growth. I'm using Stephen Covey's sort of circle of influence and sort of expanded on it a little bit. When you become an entry-level executive or professional in a multinational corporation, the first 3 years, you're really fighting for one thing, competence. Because you have no idea what the job is all about. You know, I went to a semiconductor firm, and in my interview I said, the manager asked me, what experience do you have in semiconductors? And I honestly told him, I have absolutely zero experience. I know nothing about semiconductors. I got hired for some strange reason. But it was the hardest 3 months of starting the job because I was bashed left and right, running all around. I was working 14, 16 hours a day. I don't see the sun when I go to work. I don't see the sun when I get home. But the whole struggle was trying to find competence so that I can gain one thing, credibility. And that's the first stage that you go through. That's the cubicle stage. The first cubicle stage. What cubicle stage? And then you become to move up to sort of the manager, middle management level, where you begin to have some influence. And that's the time where you're able to recommend certain things. You know, if you become a manager of sort, you begin to see systems and you can begin to start influencing the upper echelon, the vice president and the directors, of certain things that could be changed to make the process a little better, or to make it a little more just, a little more ethical. But you can't make the direct decision. You can only have influencing capabilities. You can only recommend changes. And then when you hit way up into the director, vice president, CEO, CFO positions, that's when you begin to really give certain directions. But there are still limitations if you are working in not in a great commission company. But you begin to see, as you begin to grow as professionally, that you need to begin to expand your own influence organizationally in order to change things, to make changes. Okay? And this is from a work organizational perspective. On a relational perspective, we have people that are within our inner circle relationally. I don't know if you've got experience with people that you sort of disciple and you're really close friends with. Those are the times when you begin to ask questions, you can influence them, you can talk straight into their hearts, and you begin to ask and answer this question: how can I build this person up? How can I build this person up? If the person is not your inner circle of influence, they may be somebody who is your friend or somebody that you know, then you begin to ask this fundamental question in them: how can I build genuine relationships with this person? Not that, hi, you know, I want to use you for purposes that I get promoted and end up being the stepping stone, you know, of my next promotion. No, I'm talking about genuine relationships of being a friend, you know, whether it's a Christian or non-Christian. And lastly is, where are the people in your office that you do not know, that you see them, how do you reach out to them? You may not even know their names, or you know their names. I mean, if you work in a multinational corporation, it's so easy to walk by everybody one day, wave the hand, hi, bye, and at the end of 3 years, you still do not know who the person is. And the cleaning lady at my cubicle comes in and out, and nobody talks to her. And I was the only one that gave her a red packet at Chinese New Year, and every time she comes to clean my cubicle, she talks to me. She became a friend. How do you begin to expand and grow your circle of influence relationally? And how do you now begin to pull people into your center where you really can exert influence by building them up as a person and hopefully in the Lord? Okay? Why do I say that? Because I want you to understand this. Your marketplace is really your daily traffic. The people which you rub shoulders with day in and day out. Imagine if you are a student, it's okay. Same scenario. When you wake up in the morning, brush your teeth, get into your car, go to your office, who do you see? When you go for lunch, where do you go usually? Are there people that you run into? When you go home and you get ready to go to the supermarket or the store to get your groceries, who are the people you run into? You begin to track your daily and weekly traffic that way. And as you begin to map it out, you begin to see that that's my mission's view. That's the place where I commonly work in and out, because this is a global city, you know. And the daily traffic is more relevant than looking at it from a geographical point of view. Who are the people that you talk to on the phone on a regular basis? You know, for example, I work in Singapore, I'm a SOHO, but I call regularly to head office and to the manufacturing plant. How do I now begin to build relationships and exert influence that way? Okay, that's my daily traffic too, besides my kids and my wife running around. But the nice part about this, I beat traffic jams. The biggest traffic jam I have is from my bedroom to my office. Now, I want to put all those in the perspective of a business as mission model and the triple bottom line. Okay? And the triple bottom line basically states that there is a financial impact, there is a social impact and there is a spiritual impact. In order to be a well-balanced band, you have to have those three components. How does that look like in a multinational corporation? First, I want you to understand this. Your work is your ministry. Your work, let me rephrase that again, you can't hear it. Your work is your ministry. Remember what I said about God being the worker? About God commissioning us to work? Your work is your ministry. Okay? Now, if you can't understand this, let me put it in a very simple way. You had dinner tonight, and you bowed your head, and you thank God for the food, right? I want you to consider this. Consider the economic system that is required to bring that food onto your table. When you thank God for the food, did you thank the waitress who is serving you? The cook who has prepared the food? The cook assistants who have been chopping them up? The people who have built the environment to create a nice atmosphere for you to eat in a clean environment instead of in a toilet? Or a place that smells like a toilet? Or how about the people who were selling, the wholesalers or the retailers, the cashiers, the people that stock up the shelves of products, the managers who manage the retail stores, the accountants who keep the books straight, the transport people to bring those food from one place to another. I'm moving backwards to the trail, right? So the processing plant who processes the food into canned food or into packages and to make sure that they are clean so that you don't get sick with E. coli. And to move backward again, the people who build the tractors and the machineries that farm the land and the farmers who work on it and the people who create the entire stock exchange to make sure that all these are moving in and out and that hopefully it doesn't crash. And the governments and the healthcare people who try at least their best, I hope, by God's grace, to make sure that they don't crash and that if there's anything goes wrong, their healthcare, you know, if you really had a problem with the food tonight. But I give you a picture of the entire interlinked economic system and how we begin to serve people, whether directly or indirectly. Now, work has intrinsic value, as I've said earlier, in terms of being dignity and reflection of God's creativity in our life. But there are also, of course, instrumental value, which Sherman and Hendricks talks about in the book, Your Work Matters to God. He says, through work, we serve people. Through our work, we meet our own needs. Don't think that that is selfish. I mean, we need to sustain ourselves, get a job so that we don't live off, you know, systems. Through work, we meet our family's need by providing for them. That is an important part of ministry in terms of work. Through work, we earn money to give to others. And through work, we love God. Those are some of the instrumental values that were suggested by Sherman and Hendricks. And then there's the whole idea of ethics and profits. If we begin to hopefully believe, we want to believe, it doesn't always work, but that if you run an ethical, godly business and you keep up to ethical standards, that there will be profits in the long run. It may lose some deals in the short run, but hopefully in the long run, there are good profits and it becomes sustainable business. It doesn't always work, as I said, because sometimes when you work ethical businesses, people don't like it and they shut you down. But on the whole, I think that is a good principle to adhere to. So your work is your ministry. Your work is your witness in terms of its social impact. The interpersonal relationships that you have with people, where you begin to build relationships, you can begin to influence and change the work environment. I've seen some work environment and they are horrible to work in. My brother-in-law's last job at the office, we call it Smoky Mountain. Because he works in an office which is two-story and almost everybody smokes in the aircon environment. And there were piles of garbage and papers that nobody clears and cleans. And you know what he did? He had the gift of a servant heart. All he did was, as the chief, almost the chief operating officer of that small company, he took time after work to clean everybody's garbage. And people were really surprised. Hey, you're my boss, but why are you cleaning my garbage bin? He began to influence the environment so that it is more healthy for those who work in that. And you can make that too. If there are unfair treatments to people, if there are discrimination, you can begin to influence and make the work environment a better place for people to work in. You can be involved in the local communities of your workplace. And of course, you can also volunteer for some of the company-sponsored charity initiatives that you think are honorable. Or you can recommend some of this. Yeah, the companies who do that, if the opportunity arises, take it up as a volunteer. Your work is your missions, the spiritual impact. Now, there are ways that you can do this. Think about my spectrum of multinational experience again. If running office groups can sometimes be helpful, you're going to be very sensitive. If you sing too loudly, you get into trouble. I've got one group in Singapore that was closed down because they sing too loudly. Okay? And you've got to be sensitive that you're not eating into office time when you're meeting that. You can do it in office hours. You know. But having small office groups helps because part of that the concept is that it is local, it has a regular basis, and it is structured. You can structure like having worship time, prayer time, and discuss about how you can begin to help the company to grow, to be better company, to help those that are in need, the families in there. A lot of things you can do. Do not think of them as just an office prayer group where whining sessions are held. But let it be a place where missions is being done, ministry is being done in office ministry. Like myself as an itinerant traveler, most of the time I work in a cross-cultural context. They are irregular at best. Sometimes you are here, sometimes you are there. There is a project that needs you. Please fly over there for 2 weeks. And it's predominantly unstructured. Now that's a little bit more difficult, but it doesn't mean it cannot be done. But here is the bottom line. Both ways of doing missions and providing spiritual impact is that it has got to be intentional. Unfortunately, many of the marketplace people, they sort of talk about it, they say, well, you know, my work is my ministry, that is true, but then they sort of left it as that. But it is also an active witness. I'm not talking about just sharing the gospel. My whole concept of Christian being a witness is this. You live a life so radically for Jesus that it provokes others to ask you, why are you so different? Let me repeat that. This is from a friend of mine from Malaysia, Suin. He says, you have to live a life so radically different in Christ that it provokes the other person to ask you, why are you so different? It has got to be intentional. It has got to be relational. I cannot emphasize this more. The evangelical churches throughout the world has been bashed for one thing. You want us, the non-Christian look at the Christian church and say, you want us just for your numbers. Once you get us into the church, you leave us alone and you don't care for us anymore. That has happened many times. I'm not saying all the churches, but I'm saying that in general, that is it. There is such a reaction and feeling from people who are non-Christian. They're sick and tired of us probably the four spiritual law in their face, you know, drawing the bridge diagram. I'm not saying they're bad either. Four spiritual law has been a great thing. That's where I came to know Christ as well. But that's not the only way to share the gospel. It has got to be relational. People want to know that you care. People want to know that we care. Today's paradigm is, I'm proposing that today's paradigm is not John 3:16 anymore. That was a past era. Although it is still a biblical truth. Okay? But it's shifting from a propositional understanding of accepting Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior. You know, for God so loved the world that He gave His only Son, that whosoever believed in Him shall not perish but have everlasting life. So we take that as that as long as we understand and believe in our mind, then I'm okay, I've got my ticket to heaven. But what I want to tell is this, more than that, you've got to do it in community. Today's paradigm is, by this all men will know that you are my disciples because you love one another. And it is a radical love community that people are looking for because there's a generation of very broken people. Ravaged by war, by divorces, by broken families, by all sorts of atrocities that have come our way. And it has got to be transformational. It got to intentionally begin to transform your environment, your marketplace, your daily traffic. I want to present you the Trinitarian view. That's why I said this earlier. It's very important, the Genesis 1 Trinitarian perspective. What I'm saying is this. There is no three commission. And far too long, the Church of Jesus Christ has overemphasized Matthew 28 on the evangelistic commission. You know, go make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the Father, Son, Holy Spirit. You know what's interesting? I was talking to a student earlier today and asked him, what is part two of that? He stared at me blank. What is Matthew 28, part 2, do you know? By this, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. How many of you know what's following? Teaching them to obey everything that I have taught you. We remember part 1, but rarely do we build disciples and help them to live out their faith in daily life. Let me ask you again, how many of you have heard a sermon in your church about work? 1, 2, 3, 4, maybe 5. Isn't it scary? We spend so much time at work, and there is a deafening silence about what work means to a Christian who is trying to live it out in a godly way. Look at it. The evangelistic commission, where we spread the gospel to be witnessed. The relational commission, where we say, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind and soul, and to love your neighbor as yourself. Okay? Love God, love neighbor. And the creation commission to be stewards of the earth. Now, you need to keep them in balance. There are really three commissions in one. There are different aspects of the one great commission. It's really one great commission of them three together. That's why the Trinitarian perspective is so critical in our Christian thinking. Now, I'll tell you what happens when you begin to lose that. I already explained about the evangelistic commission. How about the Creation Commission? About that 10 over years back, there was this whole idea of what you call the social gospel, where people go out to love people by doing social ministries and elevating people out of poverty. But what they forgot was to share the gospel and the truth about Jesus Christ, so that they can have a saving relationship in the kingdom of God. There was a good question that was in one of the panels, I can't remember, I think it was in Steve Rundle's seminar. Somebody asked, what's the difference between BAM and social initiatives in the US? And really, it's the gospel. Because they may be doing social work through business as mission, generating income, trying to help people and be loving in that way, but they forgot that the true nature of what we are doing, in an integral part of it, is that the gospel needs to be shared. I'm going to go on. And so I begin to put the three bottom line, the triple bottom line of BAM, roughly in this manner: is spiritual, financial, and social. And you begin to sort of integrate that in that perspective. Okay? And what I'm overlaying to you again is this: that missions, ministry, and witness are not separate things. They cannot be separate things. They must all go hand in hand. Again, it comes back from a Trinitarian perspective. So, here's my challenge to you. Imagine God. It doesn't have to be the entire church, although I put the entire church, the people of God. But just this room of people, or what we saw at the plenary at Open for Business. What happens if we are all committed that God will mobilize us into full-time ministry and missions wherever we are? Not necessarily in a cross-cultural context or building a kingdom company or a great commission company, which are great initiatives. But the rest of us who may not be called into those specific areas, which is why I like this seminar so much, because it gives us the rest of us a chance to express our love for God in and through our work. Imagine the revolution it will have if God mobilized all of us into full-time ministry and missions. It's hard to imagine, it's mind-boggling. I wish that what we have been doing at Open for Business, a lot of the fundamentals could be heard by the 22,000 that is in the dome. It is so critical. Some ways of overcoming the difficulties, I've talked about that. We go back to some ways of overcoming some of the difficulties that we have. One, find creative means to godly end. Now, we have our hands tied behind our back. We have one finger to fight with. Remember that? Sometimes we have to find creative means to a godly end. I love the story and narrative of Daniel. Do you remember the story of Daniel when he was asked to eat the king's food? The eunuch asked him to eat the king's food, and the guy said, no. We want to make sure that, you know, we are godly. And the guy said, well, if you don't eat it, I get my head chopped off. You get your head chopped off. At least we don't have bosses like this nowadays. And Daniel was in a catch-22, but he found a creative way. He didn't say no outright. He said, give your servant 10 days. I eat vegetables. If I look worse than the other guys, I eat your food. He was creatively negotiating a point and let him try it out. Many Christians, as what Bill Messenger was talking about today, he said, you know, I really did a bad job. You know, I'm really glad he was honest on that. And we do sometimes, we do a bad job, and that's fine. We learn and we continue onwards. But here's the problem. Many Christians got passed up thinking that, oh, I wouldn't do certain things in the office. That's why I was passed up for a promotion. They never asked themselves, did I do anything wrong? Was I meeting the company's objective that was given to me? And so what we need is the harder part, not to resist, but to say that I want to find creative ways. Creative access, this is the way to think about this. Creative ways to meet company's objective and to achieve a godly end. That can only be done in community. If you want to go into a more cross-cultural context, you know, keep a watch out for overseas posting and assignments. You know, I have worked my way, because I know I want to work in a cross-cultural context. I enjoy traveling. You know, put me in an office, sit me down for two days, and I'm itching to get out again. I think that's how God wired me in that way. But the thing is, take initiative to look for overseas assignments, opportunities that opens up. You know, that's one way, if you want to work in a more cross-cultural context. Grow in your ability to make a difference. Remember the two charts I showed you about growing your influence organizationally and relationally? Grow in your ability to make a difference. Make sure that you have credibility, that you have trust by your subordinates and by your superiors. Now, resistance is not always futile. As you can see, I'm a Star Trek fan. Resistance is not always futile. Sometimes there will be a time when you put your stand and you will lose your job. Don't think and don't buy into the prosperity gospel that if you do it, you know, if you put your stand, you know, you will not lose your job. Sometimes when you put your stand in, you will lose your job. Sometimes when you put your stand in, people will think twice and follow you. Like what Esther did. She took a stand and she approached, she made the initiative. She knows that she's going to get her head chopped off. There's a possibility of that. She did what was right. And she was ready to face the consequences. Either way, we have to remember, God is in control, God loves us, God knows what He's doing. And please, don't do it alone. I know American culture, I've lived in here, there's always this big thing about Lone Ranger. We have almost idolized the concept of the Lone Ranger. Again, it's back to the Trinity. God is community. There is one God, but it exists in Trinity, and God existed first in loving community. When He made us in His image, He made us to be community. And therefore, we cannot live apart from each other as Christians, as brothers and sisters. We are a family. Whether you like it or not, whether he or she smells or not, we are in a family. And we do it in community. Never underestimate. Oh, before that, I want to do one more point. Because we are also fallen human beings, I always encourage my church. The church gathered is not a gathering of saints. It's a gathering of? When sinners happen, comes together, what happens? Problem happens. Sin, remember, the effects of sin. So, it helps you when you are disenfranchised your own church sometimes, you know, to look at this and say, we are all sinners, but God can still use us. But what I want to tell you is this, please remember, I'm going to give some time for Q&A, but please remember this, very importantly, do it in community. And sometimes there are problems when you do it in community. And the sin, because sin affects everything else, it doesn't go in the way we always want to, because the environment is corrupted and is working against us. That's the problem of living in a fallen world. Having that understanding gives us a lot more patience with ourselves and with God. Okay? And never underestimate what God can do through you. Never underestimate that. I'm a living example of being a very, very simple man. I cannot claim anything that I do is of my own capability, because as I participate in God, God opens the door. You know, every time when God calls me into something else, I always look up and say, why me? There's so many capable people out there that I cannot match up to. I honestly tell you, I barely graduated from university. And I was dropped out because my academics were so bad. I went to the dean and pleaded for one more chance. I'm not a smart person. But let me encourage you this. I'm on the bottom line, which means you guys can do much better than I can. I am the minimal standard. Never underestimate what God can do through you. Talking a little bit about cross-cultural context. You want to take a breath? Okay, let's go. Looking at the cross-cultural context, I told you they gave me a big title, big topic. We have to distinguish between cultures. Okay, it's Iraq, not Iraq. There is a difference. There are 16,000 people group in the world. In India alone, there are more than 2,000. There are 200 over languages in India, 15 or 16 official languages in just one country. So when you begin to move through provinces and states, don't look at the other nations as if there was just one big mass of people. But they have unique traditions that they come from. You know, there may be some generalities of that, but don't make an assumption, please. Let me tell you honestly what happened. And please also try to brush up. I know geography is a terrible thing, but please try to brush up on this. I met a very sincere Christian, and I met her several times, and I've told her how many times that I'm from Singapore. And the last time I met her, I shook her hand and said, "Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You're the guy from Singapore, right? Yeah." And then she go, "Is it part of China?" No, it's not part of China. "Oh, yeah, yeah, I'm sorry. It's near Okinawa." I give up. Please, distinguish cultures. Learn a little bit more. You know, what I like to carry with me is an encyclopedia on CD. Because at least I get to learn a little bit before I hit a new culture or a new place that I'm unfamiliar about. I get to learn a little bit before I go to a new place. Understanding culture through their food. You begin to learn cultures through their food. Sorry, I'm Chinese. But you begin to learn cultures through their food and begin to see people and how food becomes part of their culture. Alright? Give you an illustration of that. The Filipino people are very gentle people. They're very lovely and friendly people. And their food is always a little sweet. I go to certain parts of inland China where they are really rough and thin, and I tell you the food was like this. Other than that, when you burst your tongue, go. Understanding cultures through their food. It may not be easy, but you begin to appreciate, because a big part of how culture is developed is through their food and what they eat and how they grow and so on and so forth. And learn to distinguish between a yes, yes and a yes, no. Especially in Indonesia, there is a yes and there is a yes. Which one is a no? Distinguish that. Understand work style and manage expectation. Now, especially when you work cross-culturally. Now, my company has headquarters in the US and manufacturing plant in Quebec, Canada. Bonjour. Como ça va? Boy, I tell you, the cultural differences of how those guys work was just amazing. The first time I went in to, I sort of elevated enough to send a management meeting. The first time they did was, the engineering team and the marketing team were badgering each other because engineering team was mostly from Canada and the marketing team, the rest were mostly from the US. And they were battling each other because they don't see eye to eye. And the next second round I went in and I said, "No, this cannot be done." So what I did was I flew in early, 1 week early, met up with the engineering people, and I said, "What do you guys actually are doing?" And this is what we want. And we sort of work some of these things out and talk through with the other sales manager on the side and come to some semi-agreement before we actually set the management. Meaning, where all the CEOs and everybody else comes in. That was a much better meeting. We actually got something done. And then when I was relating to this story to a lady from Canada in Montreal, she looks at me and says, "That's very Chinese method." Understanding work style and managing expectations. There are different expectations that people are looking for, also within cultures. You know, let me put it this way. In the US and Singapore culture, we expect things to be planned. In some areas of Asia, they pick up the phone and say, "I need you to be at a meeting in this place and this place, which requires flying tomorrow afternoon." What am I supposed to prepare? I'm not really sure. We're just going to meet this bunch of people. How do you do business that way? That's my mentality. But that's their way of doing business. In Asia, people are more often about, more open about their religion also. You know, that is sometimes good, sometimes bad. Alright? But they're more open about religion, their religion. And I heard a story about, you know, going to the Middle East. You get into the taxi and tell the cab driver, you know, where you want to go, and he says, "If Allah wills." That gives you a lot of security. If Allah wills, we will get there. And knowing the traffic in the Middle East, you know what happens. And if you look into Thailand, you go to Thailand, you begin to see statues of Buddhas all over the place, and people walking by, paying respect to monks and to the shrines. And then we Christians sort of go, "You've got to be very quiet about this." There's a Muslim call to prayer 5 times a day, everybody goes. You know what? I suggest that when the Muslim goes pray, you go pray with them. You don't have to pray to God, pray to your God, pray to Christ. Take time to do that. That's a suggestion. You wrestle whether you want to do it or not. But people are more open about religion and more open about talking about religion. But you have to be very sensitive because you've got to understand the culture and where they're coming from. We are the windows which they see our God. Again, it's from, you look into scriptures, what do you find? You find the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. People see God through them. And then when you come to the Babylon, captivity in Daniel at the end of chapter 6, when the king of Persia declared, "Worship the God of," was it Abraham, Isaac, and Daniel? No. Worship the God of Daniel. No. With Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? No. Worship the God of Daniel. Okay. We are the windows which people see and experience God's love. Let their stories flow into our lives. And that lets us learn their stories. Every culture has a story. Learn their stories. And then we begin to narrate the gospel in and through their stories. It's not easy. I'm still learning it. It looks nice on this and say, you know, it looks like I've got everything down. No, I don't. I'm still learning. These are principles which I've learned, but I'm learning what it really means when brother meets the world. Do I make mistakes? Yes. Sometimes I do. And in a fit of anger and a fit of just jet lag or whatever, I may make mistakes too. But God is gracious. He always gives us second chances, third chances, 97, 98, 99. The problems and opportunities across cultures, though, are very similar. People are broken. People are in need. And people need the Lord. I want to tell you a bit of my story, but I know that I've ran out of time, and that's okay. I'm going to run through this very quickly. I was involved in campus ministry in University of Wisconsin-Madison. Anybody from there? No move. And subsequently, I went to Urbana 90, but I felt disappointed because it was all on a cross-cultural context, and I knew that I had to go back to Singapore to serve the military and to begin to work because my parents were non-believers, and I felt that that was where God caused me to be. And so I felt like a second-class citizen because I was not commissioned back to share the gospel with my parents. My heart and desire was to go into pastoral ministry or to some foreign context, perhaps in China. But that was not meant to be. But I was really glad that on the response sheet, it says, will you integrate your faith into the daily marketplace? And I said, maybe I can do that. I don't know what that means, but maybe I can do that. But I still felt like a second-class citizen in the kingdom of God. So I went on to the military, I became a sales engineer, and strangely enough, for my second workplace, a six-story building, I walked in, and I suddenly sort of, I don't know whether it's my too much coffee or whatever it is, I heard something say, this is your missions field. That blew my mind. I thought missions field was somewhere out there. I subsequently went on and, you know, started office prayer groups, office groups, and the group grew from 2 to 3 to about 15 people. But then I always had this struggle of the dichotomy. I always felt like I wasn't doing enough for God. I was heavily involved in church. That's why I was a worship leader, lay preacher, deacon. But I always felt like I wasn't quite doing enough for God. I thought ministry was done either in the church or in a foreign context. But then when I got called away from reflection while working in the US and Canada, I began to see that I was reading glass scriptures with a set of dichotomous glass, a Greek dualism that separates the sacred as good and the secular as bad. Like everything that is committed to God is sacred, whether it is spiritual or material. Because God created the heavens and the earth, He created the spiritual world and the physical world. And us being human, we are unique. Do you know why? We are a combination of both. God breathed His breath and Adam became a living being. And so after learning about this, that life is, and my Christian life can be and should be full-time ministry, I begin to see in the varsity with a new set of glasses. InterVarsity is about helping Christians on campus to reach out and be a witness, but at the same time to be equipped in life so that they can continue into the workplace and the fire is continued to become witnesses and to do good work. Not good works in that sense, but good work, W-O-R-K. Right? And with that, I want to say we have a calling. You don't have to start by trying to find a company and set it up. Start where you are. If you can't do where you are now, you cannot do a great commission company. You cannot do bad. But you have to start where you are now and say, God, this is what I have. I will commit it to you and I'll figure out how I can do business as ministry here right now. If you're on campus, then think about how you can do business as ministry on campus. God is not, God does not want us to do a lot of things for Him. Because at the end of the day, what is He going to say? He's not going to say, oh, you did all these great things for me. Well done. He says, God is going to say, good and faithful servant. And so my call to you is just be faithful to your call. Thank you.
Time? For one or two.
Oh, we'll take a couple of questions. Sorry, I was... so passionate about. Please.
So you talked a little bit about the frustration of being in a kind of like a cog in the machine of a big corporation. So I don't know if you've encountered this situation, but maybe friends of yours have, where you feel like something that the corporation is doing is like the opposite of your Christian mission. How do you decide whether to leave the corporation or to continue on and to try and influence it? And how do you decide the manner in which you should leave? Should you go out with loud protests and try to bring light to, say, the way a company exploits its workers, or should you go out quietly?
Do you have another 2 hours left? No, I'm just kidding. No, it's a really complex question. The reason is this. It really boils down to where a calling is and where your convictions are. There are two ways to do it. And that's what I talk about transformation and intentionality too. If you see something that is there, you need to evaluate whether you are in a place to influence and change. If not, can you work to a stage where you can influence and change? And if you know that you cannot, then maybe you want to consider about quitting and looking for something else. Because there's not everything that we can change. That, again, I said, you must remember, sin affects the entire environment. And not everything is going to be Christian or great. Sometimes you have to live within a not-so-good system and make the best out of it. And so, it takes wisdom. And this is a key thing which is lacking, I think, inside myself and many of the Christian community here, is seeking wisdom in community with God. And God says, if you seek wisdom from me, I'll give it to you. Don't doubt. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, in terms of community, what is, I know under like BAM, they suggest that you should connect with other BAMs at different around the world. But what does it look like for like marketplace? And when you say we should do it in community, what does that look like?
As a marketplace movement, it is still really quite young. In the past 10 years or so, there are about 700 marketplace ministries that actually popped up all around the world, including mine. Okay? There are still small little movements with groups of believers that we're trying to find ways to interconnect them. There is no real one site. But what I suggest is, if you can make friends, especially build up strong friendships within your collegiate fellowship right now, so that when you graduate and you begin to form groups of InterVarsity graduates or alumni, then you have at least people who share in common this vision and you work together in community. So start on campus and building your community now. Don't wait until you go off, because those communities are much harder to find in the workplace. But what I'm glad is in the USA, most cities will have some form of a marketplace ministry running around. If you have got a problem, go to InterVarsity Christian Fellowship website on ministry in daily life. They will have a long list of ongoing ministries that are in the United States and in the world. Now, if you are going to a foreign country, look for the International Fellowship of Evangelical Students Affiliates. The ministry which I am at is called the Graduates Christian Fellowship of Singapore, and we are basically graduates with an IFES affiliation. Most of the graduates are from local, and a number of them are returnees like myself from the US back to Singapore, who are now serving there. Because we have a common vision, we caught that vision to say that our work is our ministry. So seek out those, with the internet, it's not that difficult nowadays. So seek out those communities, whether it's in the US or somewhere else. But also build your own communities. You know, and try to make a difference together.
I think that's all the time we've got for now.
Thank you very much again for your time. I appreciate it, and God bless you. Oh wait, before you go, I have one more thing. Free gifts. Yay! This is a book called the Lausanne Occasional Paper number 14, and it's a fundamental paper on the theology of marketplace ministry, some of which, quite a bit of it is where I've gotten my materials from, and I've been the editor for this book. So please, on your way out, pick one up and read it. I know it's free and it's easy to put it on the bookshelf. Promise me to read it, please.